See, Batman has shown Gotham your true colors, unfortunately. Dent, he's just the beginning. And as for the television's so-called plan, Batman has no jurisdiction. He'll find him and make him squeal. I know the squealers when I see them. And
what do you propose?
It's simple. We kill the Batman.
If it's so simple, why haven't you done it already?
If you're good at something, never do it for free.
How much you want?
Half. You're crazy. I'm not.
Killed another man today. Shot him in his back as he ran away. Then I blew up his hut with a hand grenade. Cut his wife throat and she put her hands to pray. Just 5 more dogs then we can get a soccer ball. That's what my commander say. How old? Well, I'm like 10, 11. Been fighting since I was like 6 or 7. Now I don't know much about where I'm from, but I know I strike fear everywhere I come. Government want me dead, so I wear my gun. I really want the rocket launcher, but I'm still too young. This candy give me courage not to fear no one.
That's far.
Hello, everybody.
Hey there.
Hey, what's up? Today is March 26th, and I'm Tim Mucci.
I'm Kurt Christensen.
And this is Right Club.
Welcome.
Episode 4. Can you believe it?
I can only think of Superman 4, Quest for Peace.
Oh.
But that could just be because Tim built a nuclear-powered supervillain while I was away.
I called him Nuclear Man.
Yeah, I don't know. He just kicked the shit out of me, so I'm ready for this.
Yep. Okay, so last episode we talked a bit about networking and how to get your stuff out there, you need to get yourself out there and you need to be seen, and we gave you some tips, some web forums to go to and, you know, try to hit the parties, try to kind of keep in touch with what's going on too. Yeah,
send out some tweets to your favorite Twitter peoples.
Use the internet. It is your friend.
Yeah, no, it is. It is my friend. Mostly, I've been using Twitter since then and
nice.
Trying to connect with people. Reading up on what Jon Favreau's doing.
Right.
He actually did a geek tour of his house
last
night, which was funny. He sent some pictures over of random things he has in his house from movies he's been in and worked on.
Wow.
Yeah, so I thought that was pretty funny. But you can get sort of random stuff on there.
Yeah, I have not delved into the Twitterverse yet. I keep thinking about how to use it. What's the character limit? It's like 160 characters.
Yeah, it's like your average text message.
Yeah. I keep trying to think of how to parlay that into some kind of viable fiction. But
yeah, Charlie Houston.
Yeah.
I found he writes for Moon Knight for Marvel now.
Oh, that's what he does.
But I you know, he doesn't send out a lot of tweets, as they call them.
Right.
But when he does, they're good, and once you start reading them a little bit more, they start making a little bit more sense as far as a continual story.
That's cool.
But they are just little snippets, and they don't really connect straightforward narrative, but it's the same characters, and they're kind of just maybe like little exclamations of the characters.
All right. Well, that's how to get out there, some tips how to get out there. Now, once you're out there, what do? How do you get that script you've been sitting on seen by people, these people that you're meeting?
Right.
So that's what we're going to talk about in this episode.
I was hanging out with Riley actually on, I believe it was Saturday night.
Big Time Brown.
Yeah, Riley, Big Time Brown. And he's just finished up his Spider Monkey book, and now he's switching over to Hercules. But, when I was talking to him, I was talking to him a lot about breaking into DC because of how much I love DC. And how I didn't really want to use the people I knew at Marvel for connection to get into comics. But he was very insistent that I do something, that I come up with something, then he'll gladly put me in contact with an editor there.
Yeah, if you know people, use them.
Yeah, so I've started sitting down and trying to come up with some ideas from Marvel, but I hit a few roadblocks, which I figure we can discuss and try and maybe come out with ways to overcome them, and maybe if you guys have any comments or ideas, suggestions, post them up either on our Facebook page for Write Club or at 10 Ton Studios / forum, where we have the Write Club comic book writing podcast post.
And we have a blog, so that will be the central hub for everything, for the shows and for the links to where you can actually communicate with us. And that's at writeclubpodcast.blogspot.com.
And hopefully you found us or are listening to us through there. And when you see over there on the side, we'll have a new post with links to everything we've discussed. Yep. So you can go and check them out either as you're listening or afterwards. And, you know, just leave comments right there if you want. And we'll read them and check them out and add it to the next podcast as we figure this all out.
Indeed.
So my first thing I thought, because I asked Joe Quesada via Twitter just some writing questions, and he said that he had been away from his desk, so he didn't see it, but he did talk about posting up some writing tips over the next couple of days, so I'll probably have that in time for the next podcast. But I did ask him two main questions, because these are the two that stopped me the most. Number one, especially with Marvel, how concerned should writers be with modern continuity, seeing as these, you know, they're writing stories probably for the fall now, if not winter. So I was reading up about Doctor Strange. You know, there's a new replacement Sorcerer Supreme, and who's it going to be is the big thing in New Avengers now. So it's like, you know, Doctor Strange is one of those characters who didn't really stick with his own book. He had a few things here and there, so I thought it was a good character. So as I was developing a pitch for Strange Tales, I was thinking of him in mind. But now there's big things going on with him, so I just don't know.
How do you plan around what they're doing now? Do you just go with what you're thinking and see if that flies?
And they bring back every character. I mean, every minor character at this point has pretty much been brought back. You know, I mean, Iron Fist is a pretty high-selling book. It actually is an amazing book, which I just finished the second hardcover of, and it's awesome.
I think they finally realized there are no crappy characters, only crappy creators.
It's true, and if you can open up the idea of the character, like Iron Fist, in particular, they took Iron Fist and took his origin, and then they expanded it, saying not only is there one Iron Fist, there's been a whole bunch. And
see that?
Not only are there Iron Fists, but there's six other houses as well that are other weapons, and they all meet in this big Kung Fu tournament, which is like, I mean, duh, that's, you know, Kung Fu tournament.
Absolutely. I would like to be the Iron Elbow.
I think that's a special move, which actually in the comic they do special moves, and they give them like a little, you know, text drop over it, like, you know, pain of 1,000 raining fists. And
why am I not reading this?
I don't know.
It's on my list.
It's definitely pretty amazing, especially how they brought it back, because they just opened up the whole concept. They took the core concept and opened it up.
Wait, and that's Matt Fraction and Ed Brubaker, right?
I don't believe they're still working on it, but in the first 2 to 3 books, it's Matt Fraction doing the scripts and Ed Brubaker plotting.
Matt Fraction is a perfect example of networking through the internet. He's somebody who is really active on the old Warren Ellis boards. Yes, we mentioned Warren Ellis again. but he was somebody who was really active on the old Warren Ellis boards and parlayed that here in writing comics.
It's true, and he had gotten in through, I believe, Larry Young, who did Planet Lair, AIT, Astronauts in Trouble, and he did a book called Rex Mantooth, about a super spy gorilla.
Kicksplode.
It's a really funny book, and there's actually an annotated one out, which came out in trade, which is really funny because you've got the script and the annotated notes, like a, you know, DVD commentary, as you read the book. And it is really funny, actually, because the scripts are really quite funny, and then the comments are even better. But, you know, he had gotten in through that, which I just, to mention Larry Young, there's True Facts, which he had published. I'm trying to track down my copy of this. It's a really tiny book, but it's really good about, you know, setting up yourself as an independent publisher.
Cool.
A lot of notes of how he got from just, you know, owning, I believe he owned a comic store at some point, to publishing his own books. But I do have to track that down and reread it. But it's really more for setting yourself up as a self-publisher.
Right.
But it does have good, interesting stuff about, you know, making the first steps from going from, you know, idea to selling it.
Right. All right. So let's keep talking about selling our ideas. I used to work in publishing, book publishing, so I could talk a little bit about how to go about, say you've got a novel you've been working on, what do you do? The first step, in the publishing house that I work at, and as far as I know, this is standard, you're not going to get an editor's attention unless you have an agent backing you up. So you need an agent. You can send your manuscript in, give it a little cover letter, just Google, you know, cover letters for publishing manuscripts, and you'll get a few good ideas. You can send it in, but it's going to go to something called the slush pile. And the slush pile, believe it or not, eventually gets read, but it's really low priority.
Where's slush? Why slush?
I don't know. I think because it's the stuff that just kind of falls off the top.
Your idea was a beautiful snowflake, and then it just mixed with a bunch of other beautiful snowflakes and then got wet.
It's a wet mess sitting in a pile.
It's a soggy mess sitting at the side of the curb.
So there's the slush pile, which they encourage interns to read, but assistants and associates don't generally look through the slush pile.
But you've seen some good stuff. I think I remember you saying that you found some interesting stuff.
I read some really interesting stuff, but the place that I worked at, Grand Central Publishing, they were very much, they only wanted to publish bestsellers, so it had to have that, like, that gem of an idea. It couldn't just be a good story. It would have to take it to the next level. So get an agent. The best way to find an agent is to take a look at your favorite books, the books that you love or the books that are kind of in the genre that you write. And generally in the acknowledgments, they'll thank their agent. So you can easily just Google that person, Google the company they work for, and find their information. Then you just send off a cover letter to them and your work to them. Don't make it totally crazy. Just keep it simple. Keep it personal. But don't lie. You know, you don't want to overinflate yourself because you're going to get called out on it. And then that's basically it. You know, send it to a few different agencies, and more than likely somebody will get back to you, and then you'll have an agent. And how cool is that?
Yeah, that's interesting. I have to look into that, actually, because I know my friend Jose Torres, who actually I just spoke to, he joined the Army, and was just telling me about running 2 miles in 13 minutes and carrying some girl who's going to wash out and drill sergeant majors and shooting grenade launchers. anyway, so this guy had an agent for a while, and you know, she had hooked him up with some good gigs and was shopping around the idea from his comic book, The Hunger, zombie book, to Sony and stuff like that, and also trying to shop around his novel, so definitely should look into getting an agent. It's funny that comics don't need an agent at all.
I'm talking to this guy I know, Seth. He's an agent. I won't give his details yet because I'd really love to have him on the show and then he can talk about himself. But he is actually an agent for graphic novels. If you're going to pitch graphic novels to an agent that you know does them, he suggests giving more than just a proposal. Give, you know, a decent amount of art and a full story, a plot outline or something like that.
Interesting.
But he's expressed interest in coming on and talking more about
excellent
how to go about doing that.
I would love to talk to him, actually, because I'm relettering now Liquid Fury, which I'm trying to finish up, which is me and Chris Chua's 200-page graphic novel that we've been working on for years. And I was actually trying to think about like how to get the idea out there. But he says you don't need a completed book.
No, just a good amount, probably just enough so that they can tell if it's going to be a good story or not.
Okay.
You probably need the full plot outline, though.
Right. Well, I mean, I do have all the artwork for that. I just have to letter it. So I actually was going to start offering, which you should be able to see on Write Club Podcasts, the blog.
Yes.
I'll sell a PDF of Liquid Fury, of the preview edition, which we had handed out to a bunch of comic book professionals and sold a bunch over the last couple of years at different comic conventions. So if you're interested in helping me get started and pay my rent and maybe getting me a computer so I can actually get stuff done, that would be much appreciated. I'll work out a fair rate, and you know, if you support me now, then you'll you know, be helping a budding creator, and you know, I'll even hook you up with the book once it's finally done, or anything else you might want. I'll also be setting up an eBay store too.
Right.
Should be set up by the time you're listening to this. Cool. Where you can buy my complete collection of Warren Ellis's Transmetropolitan.
Nice, good stuff.
Original issues of Kingdom Come, James Robinson's The Golden Age for DC.
That was really good too.
Starman, Preacher, big runs of major books, even Ultimate X-Men, Ultimate Spider-Man stuff. So I have a bunch of that, and I really need money. So if you are looking to just spend a little bit money on actual issues, and even if you wanted to just buy these, and then I'll buy them back from you in a couple of weeks when I'm back on my feet, I'll do that.
It's anything like a comic book pawn shop.
Exactly. And not only that, if you're interested in an Atari 7800 complete with games, I think Burger Time is in there, you can own Kurt Christensen's actual Atari 7800.
Wow.
Actual games.
I might take you up on that.
That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, so check back on our blog, because I'm going to try to link everything up, and I'll let you guys now know how to get this.
But I'm interested in that whole graphic novel agent.
Yeah.
Actually, that's mm-hmm. pretty amazing. Would he send it to now big publishers, book publishers as well?
Last I spoke to him about his actual job, he was meeting with Vertigo. So
excellent.
Yeah,
all right.
So
we should definitely work on that.
I think he works with the Dable Brothers.
Oh, okay.
The
yeah,
Dable
actually
Brothers?
That guy Jose Torres that I talked about,
right.
He did some work through them.
They're all over.
Yeah, no, they really are bouncing from Marvel to doing their own stuff now, and I think they have another imprint, which they're doing Warriors from the old 80s movie.
Which looks really good.
Yeah, Chris Tabari actually does the art. He did the art on Jose Torres's Hunger, so
right.
It's really good, and it looks just like the movie. So
yeah,
if you're even remotely a fan of the movie, you should definitely check it out. It's spot on.
I mean, great.
He's making so much money just from commissions of drawing the Warriors characters. People are crazy for this movie, so they're
love
the book.
Why wouldn't they be?
On a literary front, I was also going to bring up Wheatmark.com, which I just started following on Twitter. It's self-publishing, getting published. They are a publisher. They have a lot of good information on here. What drew me in was the you know, preparing it for Amazon, and they talk about once your book's up on Amazon, like how do you draw, you know, attention to it, and it's about building a web presence and a blog just to basically talk about your book and, you know, build a little bit of a publicity tour with it. Yeah, there's a publishing blog you can get to right from the main site.
Yeah, there are tons of print-on-demand services out there on the web. I mean, all you have to do is type that in. I think Amazon has one. I have a friend who printed out her, who created a travel book of her travels to Thailand. She created two volumes of photos.
Excellent.
Really good stuff, and really easy and fairly cheap.
And to then sidetrack to a Warren Ellis segment, he had sent a bad signal just maybe 2 days ago.
And that's his email mailing list?
Email mailing list, bad signal at mailman.flurble.org, which we can put up a link for.
Yeah.
But he was talking about, you know, he did a lot of interviews and stuff, and, you know, and for one particular book. And it sold pretty well. And then his new book, I believe it's Ignition City.
Right.
He talks about not doing the typical things on it. Anna Mercury was the first one he did. He did interviews at Newsarama, Comic Book Resources, and so on. And then Ignition City, he didn't do the interviews. Maybe a short little one, he says.
Uh-huh.
But it came in at exactly the same number
really?
As the other one.
Huh.
Yeah, so he's talking about how, like, promotional interviews from all those had absolutely no effect on ordering, which is interesting.
I wonder if that only holds true for like graphic novels. I wonder if it's still a niche market in that regard. Because I know in book publishing, it's like they would dump tons of money into interviews and whatever.
I guess hoping it's about that it building the audience. The book.
Yeah.
And he's already got his audience.
He
I
does
suppose.
Already have his audience.
Yeah, I know. I just wanted to segue on that because it just happened to come up as I was thinking about all this. So I actually did ask him for some writing submission information as well, but no response yet. So.
Not yet. Well, Uncle Warren's very busy.
Yeah, I understand. Well, if we just keep saying his name, eventually he'll just appear.
Yeah. Uncle Warren, Uncle Warren, Uncle Warren.
So there was another link that came across the actual super genius that is Jeremy Freeman from 1010 Studios.
Right.
He posted a link to a website called Optimum Wound, which I think I do remember these guys doing some interesting web comics, actually, MySpace friends from way back in the day. A lot of photorealistic stuff, but they have a blog up on there, and it's the submission guidelines for every comic and manga publisher in the universe.
Wow, cool.
And they collected all this information for you, so it's pretty interesting because it really breaks it down into a visual from you, your badass, fantabulous, ass-kicking idea, the four categories: sequential art, synopsis, script, coloring samples, and lettering, and then shows you a myriad of different publishers.
Perfect. And I'm definitely going to put that link up on our blog, so go to the blog and say thanks.
Yeah. Jeremy Freeman, big ups to you for popping this up for us. It was perfect timing. And the main thing is, though, it's like, you know, it's not good news for writers, but at least, you know, you can find the official word.
Right.
You know, like DC Comics. Sorry, writers, no dice at this time. DC Comics does not accept unsolicited writing submissions.
Boo.
And I found out through Twitter that Joe Quesada said, you know, Marvel's no longer accepting cold submissions.
Boo.
So, yeah. But, you know, he did leave it open where he said, basically, there would be at some point.
Yeah, they'll come around again.
But,
it's cyclical.
I mean, as I mentioned that to Riley, he says, you know, I don't even need that. So, I mean, if
That's
you got
true.
The right connections.
If you have an in, if you know people, you can use them. I mean, that's how I've gotten any job of that, is by using the people that I know to put a good word in for me.
Yeah, so I mean, hopefully I can come up with something that impresses him enough that I don't necessarily need this, but it's good information to have out there.
Yeah.
Because once Liquid Fury is done, I am going to try and hit up all these people, although we did hit up these people in person, a lot of them anyway, which is also really good, just to talk to the actual owners, you know, like you can talk to Chris Staros at the Top Shelf Book, you know, booth. So you can actually sit there and talk to him, and he can kind of tell you exactly what kind of stuff that he's looking at publishing and stuff, and also just taking a look at the line and seeing what they publish is good.
Go to cons, chat people up, don't give scripts to writers because they can't look at them. Go to the editors, go to the, I guess maybe the artists?
Yeah, I mean, artists too, but if you have any sort of art or any sort of way you can create this in a visual medium, even if you just have character sketches or something, any little bit of art
If you can make it sequential, even just by using photos and putting your text over it, do that. Because writers aren't going to look at your scripts because they're contractually obligated to not do that.
And that's even what Koi Pham, who's part of 1010 Studios, he draws for Mighty Avengers, he said, stick figures, just do it. Doesn't matter. Create a visual. So, yeah, I mean, I was trying to think of even just creating some stuff, you know, taking photos and then, you know, overlaying something in Illustrator just to get down a general idea of what I was trying to create visually.
It could be time-consuming. I mean, look at Brian Michael Bendis, how he got started. He's a writer. He has some artistic talents, but he created his first, like, three graphic novels just using photos and drawing over them, and it must have been painstaking, but he was able to create these stories and really get noticed.
Yeah, I mean, I know I haven't read Jinx, or I think the other one's Goldfish, but I did read, I believe it's Fire, which is sort of like an everyday take on secret agency stuff.
Cool. Yeah, I read Torso, which was his Untouchables, Prohibition era What the heck was that guy's name?
The cop. Kevin Costner.
No.
No, go on.
Yeah, know. Kevin Costner played him in the movie.
I can't believe I don't know his name because...
Johnny Law.
I love that movie.
Oh, wow. Forget it. Well, I'll put a link up to it.
It was Kevin Costner for sure.
Yeah, Kevin Costner definitely took down Al Capone.
You mean Robert De Niro.
Whatever. So, also, if you are more of a short story or magazine writer, there is a site called Raylan.com, R-A-L-A-N.com, and I'll put a link up, so just forget I said that. But he's got a lot of links up there, too, about, you know, book publishers, which markets are dead, which are paying at the time, what the response times are for the, like, say you send your manuscript into, like, Tor. It's a science fiction book or a fantasy book, then he'll give you the average amount of weeks that it takes for them to get back to you, and it's a really cool resource, and I've just started plumbing its depths, sending out some of my short stories, so...
Yeah, it's not a pretty website, so you know it's gonna be filled with some good information if you can get through it.
Yeah, it's very basic. Just stick with it. There is some good information.
Yeah, no, I definitely will check that out, actually. I'm trying to focus on getting... as I look for freelance work and everything, I found sweet101.com is a good place to write internet articles for, but there is an application process, and you do kind of have to narrow what you'd be writing about, and then you submit 2 600-word articles.
Well, that's interesting.
On those things. So I did do one for, you know, foreign movies and one for graphic novels and comics. Cool. And then just wrote I posted 2 short articles, but I really should have waited and done, you know, just written 600-word articles, which is kind of what my problem is, because I really need somebody to kind of say, give me a 600-page article on this, and I'll write it. But coming up with one on my own, I'm still trying to work out.
Right. Oh, I was actually watching like a short little on Whitechapel, the forum that we mentioned last episode. They there's a thread there about how to be a more productive creator, both writers and artists. And it was just tips people use, like. One of the tips that I gave was I generally try to write in longhand, write just pen on paper for as long as I can. This gives me a good like skeleton of what I want, and then when I type it up, I edit it out and expand on the things I want to expand on, or you know, edit the stuff that I don't want to keep in there, and that helps me, you know, so that there's not a huge long editing process once I'm done writing it. And I also suggested chemicals. But there was a... someone posted a video of Warren Ellis, again, and he was kind of making fun of anybody who has writer's block.
Writer's block, and so how do you deal with it?
Writer's block?
Yeah.
I've heard of this. This is when a writer cannot write, yes? That's the one? Then that person isn't a writer anymore, right? Yeah, I'm sorry, but the job is getting up in the morning and fucking writing. Yeah, if you get up in the morning and you can't write, then you're something else, obviously. I mean, common sense, right? Yeah. You're a gardener, or, you know, you're someone who watches fucking television. You're that guy who scratches his ass for a living.
Yeah, well, I know he uses a lot of Red Bull and whiskey in his writing process, which I find does also help writer's block.
Chemicals help people.
It's true. It's so bad. I don't know. I don't know if I could give up smoking as long as I'm writing. So, you know, it's quite... I don't know. You got to have your vice. That's another thing I picked up in that How to Become a Famous Writer Before You're Dead book.
Yeah.
Pick your vice. You know, even if it's you know, sunflower seeds or uh-huh. going to the park or whatever. Do whatever you got to do to get over that hump and have sort of your addictive thing that you do every day. I mean,
absolutely.
There's better things than smoking cigarettes and drinking whiskey, but, you know, if that's what you got to do.
Yeah. Just publish that one book and then you'll quit. But, yeah, I find I do need that one thing to kind of root me to the chair. And it used to be sunflower seeds. I don't know what it is now. I have to find something because I'm not being as productive as I would like to be.
Yeah, speaking of rooting yourself to the to the computer, which once I get a new laptop going, I'm going to try doing this for anybody out there who's laid off or needing extra money.
We all
are. I found
are.
A good website called odesk.com. It's a virtual cubicle. It's kind of odd. It has sort of this program that runs in the background that you can kind of show your employer how you're working, screenshots of, you know, stuff that you're working on for them.
Wow.
It's got a bunch of stuff. It's IT companies, programmers, web designers, and more, you know, all across the world, apparently. There is big, I get, you know, daily emails about jobs, and it's, there's a lot of article writing and SEO, search engine optimization, which is
huge.
I see that
right now.
All over for writing jobs.
Yeah.
But it seems pretty legit, and you do actually have to take like a test you have to finish in 60 minutes to get there. You know, there's flat rates, there's hourly rates, but it's basically like having an office job and sitting there.
So you guys do it and let us know how it turns out.
Yeah, no, I do. I mean, they've got even got data entry. I could sit at my laptop in Starbucks for 8 hours doing data entry.
Very true.
It pays money. At this point, I will do anything for money. I just tapped into my superhero monkey bank to get $70 and change, so just so I can come out to Brooklyn to record for you people.
Uh-oh. You see that guy? That guy's? He needs money.
It's true. Just give me money for anything. I have some stuff, books, whatever you're looking for.
Yeah.
Or if anybody, I was thinking about doing a contest. If you can provide me a contact to get a job, any job at this point, or, you know, a good lead that leads to a job, I will give you anything.
Not
from
to sound
my,
desperate, but...
From my personal collection, any graphic novel, any, you know, I hate to say movie, DVD, because my DVD collection is kind of priceless, but yeah, anything you want.
Wow, I might take you up on that.
Yeah, well, considering we've both been going to, you know, talent agencies and all that, I don't
temp agencies. I haven't been to a talent agency yet.
Oh, Creative Circle. That's a talent agency.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I've been there.
Yeah, I know. I was really hoping for something through them, but
I
have not.
Yeah, they're rough.
Anything.
They do a lot of copywriting, and a lot of their stuff is like high-end advertising agencies. So they want people with like 3 to 5 years experience.
Yeah, and I don't
that's
really
never
have
fair.
Much. Yeah, and I seem to, every time I'm going out, there's, you know, I'm like, oh, well, you know, I just got laid off when they ask what I do, and, you know, then they give me the high five because they know they've just gotten laid off, too, you know. I've met a lot of people who are interning graphic design at agencies, laid off, you know, and they actually tell me, like, they're sitting there as an unpaid intern as 20 people are leaving the office, you know, getting laid off, so.
Yeah, it's a crazy world out there, especially here in New York. Where
dystopia, here we come.
I know. I hear New York has run out of money. I don't know what that means, but should be interesting in the times to come.
Yeah, I don't know. So yeah, if you can hook me up with a job, that would be much appreciated.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to do all these online. There's quite a few things out there to write for blogs and whatnot, and I don't know.
Yeah, Craigslist is a great resource. They have a writing and editing little section that I hit occasionally. Go to our blog and use the comments. We're very active on the 10 Ton Studios forums, so go to our page there. There's a link on our blog. And, you know, let us know if you know of anything or if you are in the same boat and just want to commiserate with somebody.
Yeah, and we'll put up comments too. If we check out these links and they pay off and whatnot, we'll be sure to put some comments in there and let you guys know that
let's help each other.
We can make some money.
Let's make some money.
Let's do it.
Speaking of making money, what a poor segue. Let's talk about we mentioned on another show, the New York Times graphic, what is it, graphic books bestseller list?
Graphic books.
And, yeah, I thought it would be fun to just go through the, see what's selling this week. So in hardcover, and I believe that the New York Times, they list their stuff by sales. So this is purely sales-based. This is what people are buying, not what's, you know, adding to the discourse out there. But this is the hardcover list. So it's number one is Watchmen. And how could it not be with the movie out?
Yeah, but I think the last time actually it was number one, the soft cover, but the hardcover is now number one.
The hardcover is number one.
That's interesting that after the movie, people were picking up the hardcover.
Well, they probably wanted to know why it sucks so bad and everybody's talked so highly about the graphic novel.
that could be it.
So number two is Joker by Brian Azzarello and Lee Bermejo. I can't say his last
name. Yeah, I flipped through this when we were at Bergen Street Comics, and this looks really good, actually.
It's really good. I didn't think I would like it. It parallels the movie really well, The Dark Knight, but it was written before, I think, and it's just coincidental that it came out around the same time. But it's very much a realistic look at the Joker and Gotham City and his relation to Batman, and it pays off really well in the end. I mean, it kind of makes you question Batman's relationship to the world that he's kind of created.
I think I've always questioned Batman's relationship with anybody.
And speaking of Batman's questionable relationship, the number three is Batman the Killing Joke by Alan Moore and Brian Bolland.
You know, it's funny, I haven't actually read this, but...
You've never read The Killing Joke?
I know.
I'm giving it to you to take home and read.
All right, I'll read it. I don't want to spoiler anything about this, but this involves Batgirl, yes?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
I
don't know if you can spoil it since it came out in 1988, and they've pretty much kept to the continuity of this.
Yeah, well, it's just something actually I was talking with Lauren, my girlfriend, last night about it, because a lot of stuff has come up between Tim's girlfriend, Andrea, and my girlfriend, Lauren, talking about Watchmen and stuff and about girls and girl superheroes and stuff. And, well, you know what? I'll just spoil it.
Yeah.
Batgirl got shot in the spine by Joker and paralyzed. And other than... I mean, actually, at this point, I think that's the one solid piece of Batman continuity that's still sticking, considering that,
that
even Jason
crippled.
Todd's back. Yep. And but, it's kind of... It's cool that she's kind of wheelchair-bound super heroine Oracle now, involved with the whole Birds of Prey, girl superhero book. But at the same time, I don't know, Batwoman, the, you know... token lesbian superhero
who just that failed.
Yeah, I mean that's not a good replacement, you know. Like, and but I feel like at the same time there's no way to really undo what happened.
No, well, I mean, I guess if we could talk about this as if it were a real whole universe, you've got people. I mean, Doc Magnus can't go in there and jig her with her spine a little and give her like a Metal Man spine.
It's true, but
you
I mean,
could
I would
fix
only.
DC.
I would, you know, I was. It's gotten me thinking about female superheroes in general,
yes, and
how
they always get the shaft.
They do, and that's a really funny statement taken out of context. I was trying to think if you could think of any female superheroes that really should come back, particularly of Marvel, but in DC either. Just post some comments on that because I have been trying to think of that because it's really not fair.
Yeah. No.
And I have a feminine sensibility that I could write a superhero comic.
I have a very feminine sensibility. I role played girls all through high school.
That's true. And one of my most epic characters was a chick as well, based off of Psylocke. I had a real big Psylocke thing.
Wait, who was that?
Venus, or whatever her name is, from The Superiors. Superiors, which is, you know,
Wait.
Us talking about, you know, our role-playing characters and us not bringing that up.
Wait, you were Fury?
Fury.
No,
I said Venus. Well, you know, it was a generic female name.
We played a group of characters that was kind of the mirror universe of the Wildcats, I guess.
Yeah, they sort of were. It was sort of like the zealot Psylocke, you know, femme fatale.
He was Fury.
Mental powers.
Right. I was the lone wolf
Which, let me just tell you, you've never seen, like, a split personality come over someone like this. This is just like, I didn't know what he was talking about half the time, but it was funny as hell.
He was a really, he was a guy who, he was like a grifter. He was a guy with guns who, I think he could regenerate, but he had really good aim. He was like a... He was a minor league baseball pitcher in his real job. And he was only minor league because he just didn't care enough to actually try. And he was just a guy who kind of coasted through everything because he was really good.
Yeah. And then rounded off by our friend Massmaker, who was the big generic British type superhero with a giant metal talking horse that often was the comedic end of everything, showing his horse balls to everybody or something. I don't know. This is just some
about the
weird stuff. Weird stuff. But we're way segueing. But let's draw it back to the New York Times.
So back to the New York Times and their horse balls. number four is All-Star Superman. And we talked about that last
time. We raved.
Time.
I'll read the second one by the next podcast.
Do it. Read it. It's so good. Even if you have no idea... You know, even if you haven't read Superman since you were, like, 6 years old, read it. There's no learning curve.
It's better, actually. And to quickly parallel to a movie like Speed Racer.
Right.
And All-Star Superman both made me feel like I was five again.
Wow.
It's so much fun and yet not, like, talking down to you or really simplistic same jokes over and over like you'll see on generic cartoons and stuff like that. But this was actually intelligent and fun and... kind of wholesome. Speed Racer in particular was a very wholesome family thing.
Right.
There wasn't particularly like betrayal and all that.
Well, the anime was like that, you know?
Yeah, and it just did a really good job, and I thought it was really exciting. Like, I was gripping my pajama pants, my Superman pajama pants, as I was like watching Speed go around the corners. I had no idea I would even feel like that while watching the movie. I figured it was a big, dumb action movie that I would watch.
Wow, he's a demon, so you better look alive.
Yeah, so, and also Superman and that have both made me feel like a kid again, which is really got me jazzed up about, you know, comics and, you know, creating cartoons.
Cool. Number five is Batman, R.I.P., rest in peace.
Word.
I guess it's the death of... I guess they killed Batman? I don't know. I have to read this.
Yeah, see, this is the part of being out of the continuity loop. You know,
everything's changing right now.
Yeah, the status quo is pretty much changed on everything. Like, they are canceling Nightwing's ongoing comic and Robin. So I imagine, well, I'm sure the Final Crisis thing by Grant Morrison, which we both plan on reading by the next podcast to discuss.
We're going to read
new stuff.
We're going to read Final Crisis. We're going to take the plunge and read something current.
Yeah, we're way out of loop. So we're trying to catch up to you guys, but the Batman Rest in Peace thing seems like a way to post-Final Crisis streamline the whole Batman universe.
Right, good.
And I'm pretty sure that it's Jason Todd taking over, which, okay, Jason Todd, you know, when I started reading comics, he died.
Yeah,
because people called up and said, kill him.
Yeah, right. And now they brought him back.
Yeah, I mean, come on.
The next, number six, is Humbug by Harvey Kurtzman and others. I don't think I think it's a... Wait, what does it say? It's by Fantagraphics. The 11-issue run of this satirical magazine from the 1950s receives the hardcover treatment.
Well, that's awesome, because Harvey Kurtzman, he did the Mad Magazine, right?
Yes, yeah, he did.
Yeah, when they mentioned him in the, I believe it was the Comic Book Confidential documentary that I'd watched, man, Mad was so cool back in the day. Like, Mad was so, like, current and, like, hitting major things and making fun of, like, things at the time and really making fun of, like, high art and things like that and totally spoofing it. And nobody had seen anything like that. So I definitely want to try and pick up some of this early stuff.
Cool. Number seven is Tarzan, the Jesse Marsh Years, Volume 1. I don't know what this is. It's by a guy named Gaylord Dubois.
Gaylord Dubois. Too bad that is taken.
Yeah.
That is a pen name, man. Or, I mean, if that's a birth name, I'm not sure.
I think it's his birth name.
Dude.
But it's by Gaylord Dubois and Jesse Marsh. Isn't that the guy who's Preacher? What was his name?
No, Jesse Custer.
Jesse Custer.
Golden Age Adventures of Tarzan, which is... I love Tarzan, and this is probably more, I guess, the early strip stuff.
Probably, yeah.
I'm a big fan of Tarzan and those old
I'm a big
strips.
Fan of Gaylord Dubois.
Gaylord now. Dubois. I just want to say it.
I'm sorry, Gaylord. Number 8 is Eerie Archives, Volume 1. I think we talked about this.
Yep.
One show ago. So, yeah. Read that. Old stuff is good for the most part. Number 9 is Wormwood, Gentleman Corpse by Ben Temple Smith. I've never read it. I've seen some art for it. It looks pretty cool. Their little descriptor is humor and horror team up in the series about a maggot that animates corpses and solves supernatural problems.
That actually sounds pretty interesting. Wormwood. Okay. But it's by Ben Temple Smith,
yes,
who did, I believe, write the art for 30 Days of Night.
Yes, and he does Fell. Yeah.
Which, I mean, he's a kind of cool artist, kind of like a, I'd say it, but lower end Ashley Wood.
Yeah.
But I'm wary about artists writing.
Well, we'll have to see. We'll have to check it out and see.
I mean, you never know. Actually, I shouldn't say that, because there's a lot of artists that began writing, and it was amazing. So.
That's true.
Complete Peanuts.
Yep, that's number 10. Number 10 is The Complete Peanuts from 71 to 72.
Dude, I only have the first 6
by
books.
By Chuck Schultz.
And I'm really sad. I should actually probably try and sell those too. I mean, I hate to do it, but once they finally... Fantagraphics is going to put all these hardcover collections of the entire Peanuts run into hardcover books. And it's like some big, massive 12 collection, I think, of 2 books each. And... my God, Peanuts, I can't even talk about
it. Good stuff.
I love Peanuts.
Okay, now we're on to the paperback list. So, number 1, Watchmen. So it's taken the top spots in both paperback and hardcover.
You know, I can't believe they've finally just gotten me so apathetic about Watchmen.
I know. I know. Me too. I feel the same way. I'm like, oh, shut up about Watchmen.
I want to go have a pint with Alan Moore and be like, God, this goddamn Watchmen, man. Enough, right?
But, you know, a month ago, I would have been like, bring on the Watchmen. Give me more Watchmen.
I know. I'm prepping my individual issues for sale on eBay, which I saw somebody had just bought for $256.
Wow.
So
check
I
the
have
blog.
The full run. This is like original flea market purchase.
Yep.
I looked at the cover stickers. They were like $2, $5 each.
There
you go. Know, so, but
you could own them.
Yeah, straight from my box of comics that is my bed.
Yep. Straight from under Kurt's bed. So, number 2 is Wolverine Origin.
It's interesting with the movie coming up and everything. They're really making a big push at Marvel through for Wolverine. There's actually a thing coming up which I think is interesting, a Wolverine Art Appreciation Month.
Really?
Where they're doing different covers of Wolverine, but like in really cool styles. It's definitely worth checking out because the styles are so out there, at least from the ones I've seen so far. One was cool. It looked like the dogs playing poker, but it's all the different versions of Wolverine. First version to last. But
I want that on velvet.
With like black light.
Yeah.
But it looks kind of cool, and there's some, you know, like really sketch charcoal type art on there. So it looks like it might be cool. Wolverine Origin, I know they're tying it into the movie.
Yeah.
I wasn't a huge fan, but
I wasn't either, but I guess they felt they needed to do it before Hollywood did it.
That's exactly what Joe Quesada said.
Yeah. So good on you.
Yeah, and you know what? I don't hate it.
No, but it's just, you know, it's Wolverine, and we grew up where Wolverine was like a man with no past, so now that he has a past, it's kind of like, okay.
Yeah, when was that actually published, did it say?
Was published, it doesn't say.
It was a good couple of years ago, I know that.
Yeah, it was...
probably between X-Men and X-Men 2.
Yeah, definitely.
But, yeah, I don't know, I think it's worth checking out. The art's pretty cool, even though it's not inked, it's all like digital coloring.
Yeah,
on
it was
pencils.
When they...
Andy Kubert.
They tried to cut out that step to save money, but
yeah, but it's actually only $16.99, which is interesting.
Yeah, not bad for a paperback. Number 3 is Batman: The Dark Knight Returns by Frank Miller.
And I remember you gave this to me years ago, like in high school. I think it was like you hadn't read that, and like, you know, I hadn't really paid much attention to Batman or anything outside of the early Detective 400 range, I think it was, when I first started picking it up.
Norm Brayfogle,
my favorite Batman artist, my favorite one. I think it's like 401 to 411 were my first Batman comics, and that, you know, light blue cape with the gray suit, the sleek Lamborghini looking Batmobile.
Yep.
Oh, so good.
Yep. So Dark Knight Returns is number 3. V for Vendetta is number 4. And that's really interesting. Yeah. It's another Alan Moore book, Alan Moore and David Lloyd. So I guess they're pushing the Alan Moore stuff?
Well, I guess most people probably knew that Watchmen was a graphic novel because of the commercials and everything. So now when they hear V for Vendetta was also one, they're like, they're probably like, oh, V for Vendetta, that was a pretty good movie, but I wonder how it is as a comic.
Yeah, it was a good comic. Yeah, it was really good. And the movie wasn't so bad.
I liked it. And I loved the graphic novel when I was a kid. Actually, it's one comic that me and my dad totally bonded over. Of all the comics I brought home, that one, the graphic novel, totally grabbed his attention, and we totally loved it. Definitely like a 1984 superhero revolutionary.
Yeah, yeah. Don't just see the movie. The themes are very different between the movie and the comic. Number five is Walking Dead Volume 1.
I bought Jared this, actually, my roommate, for his birthday last year, the hardcover. And I read the first arc, and then I read a little bit later on when they were all kind of walled up in the prison. Zombies have taken over the world, and wakes up. It's very, like, the beginning was ripped off of 28 Days, but really it came out before 28 Days later. So this is like, you know... realistic take on zombies taking over the world.
Yeah, it's good. It very much follows the survivors and not in such the doom and gloom way that movies do, because they can only sustain the story for like an hour and a half at the most. So.
It has a TV show feel.
It does.
Robert Kirkman, I really dig most of his
stuff. He's really good. He's good because he's able to just get in and out of a story.
If anything, you know, you might be missing a little depth here and there, but in the meantime, you're getting good art and, like, some cool action or some cool little scene that, you know, feels fresh rather than just you've seen the same thing over and over.
Yeah. Number six, Scott Pilgrim versus the Universe.
Okay, this
I've
I have
never
to
read
say.
A Scott Pilgrim.
Brian Lee O'Malley, I actually read his Lost at Sea years ago when it first came out. I love that book. It's very serious, melodramatic, girl coming of age in high school type thing. Kind of girl hates the world. But Scott Pilgrim, from what I hear, is the complete opposite. It's the goofball, crazy, over the top, fanboyish a little bit, action-y. Scott Pilgrim versus the Universe is Riley keeps pushing this on to me. He's actually going to bring it by the studio so I can read it all. I think book five just came out.
Okay.
And he's apparently got like a psycho ex-girlfriend who's like a teenager named Knives. And like she shows up and it's always like Knives, age 19. And like, you know, it's like a battle. But it's supposed to be really funny. And Michael's Sarah? Doing the movie. Yep. So
the movie's coming out. Number seven, Madman Atomic Comics Volume 2 by Mike Allred.
Oh, yeah, and we mentioned Madman on the last list from the GQ thing.
Right.
So this one is more later on, actually.
Yeah.
Which his art gets a lot more...
pop.
Streamlined, colorful, poppy. Yeah. So definitely pick up that.
Number eight, Appleseed Volume 4. I've never read an Appleseed comic.
I had one. I read, like, it was individual issue. I guess those are the collected ones. But the art's pretty amazing. And the anime was pretty good.
Yeah.
And
what's it, like a cop drama?
It's, you know, like a human robot. Manga. It's very typical manga, sort of. It's the one of the top of the game, top of the heap.
Okay. Number nine is Buffy the Vampire Slayer Volume 3.
Season 8 of Buffy,
continuing in comics.
I need to read this because I am a huge Buffy the Vampire Slayer dork. I love the movie. I had a big crush on Christy Swanson.
Right.
But, you know, then I realized that I actually had a poster of Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Of course you did.
With Luke Perry up there. but, you know, then I hated the show at first, and then eventually around season 4 I got into it, and I've seen every episode. I know it through and through. So this, I looked at the first issue of it. Mm-hmm. It's got like Buffy jumping out a plane. You know, Xander now is the Nick Fury of the Slayer operation.
Because he's got his eye patch.
Yeah, no, him getting his eye gouged out in the actual TV show was the most horrifying things I've ever seen in TV. A character that I love dearly was getting his eye gouged out and screamed like a little girl. It was awesome. Joss Whedon.
Joss Whedon. I've got things to say about Joss Whedon at the time. Number 10 is Fables Volume 11.
11, huh?
Yeah. Wow. I read the first arc of Fables, and it was good. I read the second arc, and they totally lost me.
Yep.
I wasn't really that into it.
That's the way I felt.
Yeah, so Fables, people like it.
Well, I do like, so it's Mark Buckingham doing the art now, yeah. Which I'm a big fan of.
He's
his.
He's good, yeah.
He had inked Chris Bachalo on Shade the Changing Man, which
right.
I loved, and then he eventually took over, and like his style I've seen evolve over the past like 15 years, and it's good stuff.
We should do our own, maybe for next time, we'll do our own personal like top 10 list.
Okay, yeah. So, I actually was looking at the top shelf of my bookshelf,
right.
The one that you gave me actually last time.
Oh, right.
So I have up there, it kind of, I have to keep taking books out and uh-huh. replacing them with other ones that are more important. So yeah, that's my top tier books.
Nice.
So
I
will definitely come up
mine.
With a good top 10 for myself, and you come up with a top 10.
I will.
We'll discuss, especially things that are not mentioned on here, maybe more the obscure stuff.
Yeah. So, I think that just about wraps it up.
Yeah, I mean,
episode.
Real quick, I'd like to touch just quickly
yeah, yeah.
to keep up on
yeah,
continuity
please.
Stuff is the digital comics from Marvel, which seems kind of like a good deal.
Yeah.
It's $4.99 a month. If you get it for a year, build is $59.88 or $9.99 a month.
And it's just one fee, right? You get all their comics just for
well,
that.
It's not all their comics. That's kind of what I'm having a problem with.
No. But it's whatever they put out digitally you have access to.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there are literally, I think they say, over 5,000 comics
wow.
or then some. But it is a good way to try and get caught up on
right.
things. I was looking at Fantastic Four, Isla de la Muerte.
Oh, the Island of Death.
It's a Spanish, actually, it's Los Four Fantásticos. Los Cuatro Fantásticos, sorry. And but the reason I was checking that out, actually, is because there's this penciler, Juan Doe, who I found out through Agent M's blog on
uh-oh.
Marvel, which I definitely recommend checking out or following him first via Twitter, which he's actually, I found out, the guy who brought Twitter to Marvel, or Marvel
oh,
to
really?
Twitter, I should say.
Very cool.
Yeah, but, you know, I looked at this Marvel Digital Comics, and I'm not sure. I'm not totally sold. The
yeah.
thing's a little clunky, but I just can't think of a better way to keep up to date.
It's true.
The
I
library
mean,
only has so much.
Yeah, when you're strapped, and you also want to read them as they're coming out, just to kind of keep in touch, but it is hard, because I feel like to do that, you kind of have to be in one spot to read them. It doesn't have the freedom as, like, just grabbing your comics and bringing them to the coffee house or whatever.
Yeah, and you really need a decent computer and a decent internet connection
yeah.
to even get Marvel's site to load, which
yeah.
I had a lot of problems from the stolen internet that I was checking this out on last night. But I think that's pretty good stuff. I also did just want to mention that Cartoon Network, Genndy
yeah.
Tartakovsky is coming back with a new cartoon.
Really? He did, he used to do Dexter's Lab?
Yep.
Dexter's
and,
Laboratory?
And Powerpuff Girls, the
right.
Star Wars Clone Wars, and
oh,
my personal
right.
favorite cartoon of all time, Samurai Jack.
Nice.
So there's some images out there. You can do a search for it. It's Sim-Bionic Titan. And there's some awesome art up for it. It looks like it's a giant robot fighting a monster, dragon monster, and looks really awesome. And just the fact that this is coming back, you know, he's coming back with this awesome cartoon to Cartoon Network. It's awesome. I
yeah.
can't even wait. You know, actually, Cartoon Network, real quick, has this crazy weird show, Flapjack. I highly recommend it. It's this weird cabin boy and bizarre captain of this ship and this talking whale, and they all just kind of hang out, and it's super bizarre humor. Made me laugh really hard sometimes. Other than that, there's also the Legion of Super Evil on there, this new 3D animated sort of three-guy sitcom, sort of like the Three Stooges of super villainy.
Right.
And it's kind of lame, but it's worth a check out. I mean, they do the typical jokes, and they try to put a fresh spin on it, but
right.
I don't know. And it also says here that Peter Chung, who did E.M. Flux and that Alexander bit,
oh,
he's
right.
directing Fire Breather, the cable channel's first original all-CGI feature film.
Wow, Fire Breather.
Yeah, so there's a lot of cool animation stuff that's coming out, too, I have to say.
Cool. All right. I've got nothing to plug this time around except for go to the blog, writeclubpodcast.blogspot.com. You can get links to our Facebook page, our 10 Ton Studios forum. I've thrown some photos up there of us and our stuff, and links to Amazon and other places where you can buy the stuff that we've done. And you can also listen to the shows straight from the website. And it's fun.
And if you like the outro song that we used on the last two, it's Stop Talking About Comic Books or I'll Kill You.
By Ookla the Mock.
Personal favorite. You can find UklaTheMock.com. The band's up on there. They have a bunch of, well, let's say like four or five albums. They're all super genius. They're all super nerdy. Yeah. I saw these guys at Pittsburgh Comic Book Convention. They rocked out. They had a guy run out as Aquaman.
Oh, man.
That's a big song for them is Arthur Curry, all about how Aquaman pretty much sucks. And he's all upset because all the other superheroes are better.
Poor but Aquaman.
They have one about, you know, Riker from Star Trek Next Generation. On the new album, they have one, What Would Scooby Do? You know, or Gary Coleman. No, but they're musically just great, too, and super geeky. So if you are a fanboy of anything, sci-fi, comic, anything, like, you'll find some stuff on here that you'll absolutely love.
Great.
So.
And that's UklaTheMock.com.
Which, I mean, the band's named after the Thundar the Barbarian character. So
the Chewbacca-ish Ookla,
you know,
who was
geeky.
A mock. So, okay. Well, this was episode 4 of Write Club.
And look forward next time to more information from professionals and creators about pitching and everything. And in the meantime, try and leave some comments and see what you'd like to hear or what you have to say in response.
Yep. So, Write Club.
Write Club.
I'll kill you. I don't care if the Hulk could defeat the Man of Steel. I'm gonna rearrange your face. Roger's shield. I just couldn't care less if they bring back Kraven. And I don't care if Spider-Man's a clone.